Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott. Textual healing.
So I actually wanted to start things off this week with a note. And surprisingly, this is not going to be about how Elliot is tragically unhinged.
I have something on that.
Oh, okay, good. No. Good. I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, we have received a number of complaints from our listeners about the creakiness of my desk. And you might notice, like, for instance, when I lean on my desk,
that's when you're moving your desk.
Well, it's when I'm leaning on my desk. Yeah. But it hurts. It hurts to hear. And as a result, I have decided to buy a new desk. I've chosen the desk that I would like to purchase. And there's good news and there's a couple rounds of bad news. The good news is I like the desk very much. The bad news is it is $22,000. I have decided I obviously can't afford a desk that's $22,000. So I've decided to start a GoFundMe page, for our listeners to contribute to a desk that I can put in my room, on which I will record the podcast. I know it's been a really tough year for everyone listening. And
this is important.
But this is important.
This is important.
And I also think, you know, if you could think about like how much you could afford to give to something like this, is it $200, $300, just double it, because this is a podcast that means so much to you.
Mm-hmm. May I ask like what the awards were, I guess the rewards will be for certain tiers of donations?
Elliot, thank you for asking. And I'm not interested at all in any rewards. I'm not willing to give for the people who donate.
You don't care about giving them awards.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm giving them nothing.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Nothing. I'm Got asking it. That people.
Well, the gift of your voice every Thursday is their gift. Truly,
that's how I feel too. And I will say, the last thing I'll say, the other downside of the new desk is that it actually creaks as much as my current desk. That is something our listeners should keep in mind, that they of course will be contributing to a new desk, however it won't fix the problem of the noise.
There's also sort of like a conjuring thing that happens, that the tapping from Brent's side actually goes over to Elliot and my side. So today I will be featuring this is me today, guys.
But until I get the new desk, I will do my best to not make too much additional noise with my creaky flea market desk.
There was the earlier era of the show where I had to politely ask you not to yawn audibly.
I yawned.
Oh yeah, there was he yawned so loud.
I yawned like twice, and yes, we recorded late at night.
We
aren't all night owls like Elliot Wexler Glazer.
Late at night.
Three in a row. We record three in a row.
No, it was tiring.
Brent is an early. He goes to bed early. I've texted you at like 1 a.m. before and there's been no response. Whereas I've texted Elliot before at like 3 a.m. and I got it like
Elliot is up. I swear to God, Elliot is up until 4 a.m. I get texts from Elliot.
I'm like Elliot though. I don't sleep either.
Well, and here's the crazy thing. I'll get a text from Elliot at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And I write him back when I wake up, which recently has been around 7:30. And then he'll write back within 30 minutes. And I'm like, oh my God, you sleep for like 2 hours.
That's me.
I don't sleep a lot. Yeah. I mean, I sleep for like six, maybe 7 hours.
Oh, see, I wish.
Usually asleep by 1:30.
You grab life by the horns.
I sleep like 5 hours a night. That's my average.
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's the way it's been since I was a kid.
Look, if you can sustain that, I would love nothing more. I usually need 12 to 13 a night, and that doesn't include my nap. That doesn't count. Yeah.
I do take a nap every afternoon. I balance that out. I take about like a 45-minute hour nap every afternoon.
That's right. Yeah. You have a siesta. That's
lovely. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I don't need 13 hours. All right.
Should we get started?
Why don't you start it?
Yeah.
Yes. Start us off. Okay.
So this one is a bit weird. This one's a bit complicated because it goes in like lots of different directions. But basically, The Gap put out this shirt that popped up at Pride's, you know, called the Lesbian Avengers, and it had sort of like a bomb logo, and it's a logo based about on a real group. It's a real group that existed in the early 90s. It was started in the early 90s in New York City as a response to things happening in New York City and lesbians being overlooked oftentimes within queer history stories. At that time, it was mainly gay male history stories. And so the Gap put out this shirt with the logo on it. Well, old members of not, they're not old, but like members of the group in the early 90s, the Lesbian Avengers, got very angry. They were saying, they put out a statement saying, our lesbian history and movements are not for sale. And they were very angry that the Gap would sort of, you know, commercialize this important group that did really important things. Specifically, one of their lasting legacies is the Dyke March, which is going into its 29th year.
How dare you?
Happens every single year. That's what it's called. Don't get angry at me.
But it's called.
And it famously had a very controversial moment in like 3 years ago, I think now, where they kicked a member of an Israeli queer group out of the march because they had a flag. They had the Israeli flag in the march there. Okay. So that was a very controversial moment, but that's probably what the group is most commonly known for now. Or the Dykes March is.
Yeah.
Anyway, the group, the shirt was designed by Carrie Moyer. And Carrie, the name of the whole Lesbian Avengers came from because of the show, The Avengers. Diane Rigg was sort of a lesbian icon from The Avengers. And so they named this group and they would go around doing lots of great things. Well, the person who was a Lesbian Avenger, Carrie Moyer, who created the logo, sold or licensed the logo to Gap to do it for $7,000, which I think she got, she could have gotten more money from that. I know, $7,000 is sort of bonkers. And her thinking was that it would sort of get the word out about the Lesbian Avengers into sort of queer narratives and queer history by having it on a Gap shirt being sold for $34 at the Gap. And and that was sort of her motive behind it. But of course, Lesbian Avengers, other members of Lesbian Avengers were like, no, this isn't how it should go. So the larger issue is sort of the commercialization of Pride and how we find this balance between respecting queer stories and queer history and queer groups within history, while at the same time, you know, using capitalist ventures to get the word out about inclusive pride issues. And the whole debate over this really sort of centered on like, what direction is pride going in terms of commercialization? And also, you know, the big thing is like, and the New York Times article did a really great point at the end of pointing out that while like storefronts and everything are showing pride flags, and it looks like there's a more accepting sort of nature of queer lifestyle in around the United States, the FBI stats report that hate crimes against LGBTQ people hasn't changed much since the early 90s. Like the actual numbers have not changed drastically at all. So if there is a greater acceptance, it's not being reflected in hate crimes being reported to the FBI. So it's an interesting conversation that this sort of shirt brought up.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it's like, you know, this is sort of a internal, you know, an internal symbol, you know, known for a specific moment in history, especially among lesbians. And it's, you know, very odd to think that it was co-opted by the Gap of all places for such little money, but you know, but at the same time, like,
which I will say, just to put it out there, Carrie Moyer donated the money, the $7,000 she got to a lesbian historical archive.
She donated to Lilith Fair, I think.
She's restarting Lilith Fair with $7,000.
$7,000. That's right. No, I think it's just interesting that you know, I think, you know, above all else, even if, again, this is how I feel about all this stuff with corporate pride, but even if numbers aren't changing and even if hate crimes don't go down, it's interesting to see that, you know, at its core, the Gap can elicit a conversation like this about this, teach us about this without that even necessarily being their, you know, choice in the first, their intention in the first place.
So I guess I was actually, I read the, of course I did my homework and I read the article and I was taken aback. I respect people who don't want any kind of commercialization when it comes to any sort of movement and yeah. piece of the movement that they created. I guess I was taken aback because not the shirt didn't just have the logo of the group, which obviously most too. People wouldn't. It had the names of the founding members. Yeah. Correct, Alan?
Yeah, on the back.
On the back. And so to me, it was like, oh, this is actually informational. Yeah. And the fact that they had bought the rights to it, to me, made it seem like this is kind of a, personally, I thought this was sort of an inappropriate response.
Yeah.
They played, you know, Gap, for what, you know, for better or worse, they still played the game legally, and they included a shirt that I personally deemed as respectful and informing the public of a group that I had never heard of, and certainly most people haven't. Mm. And so to me, I thought, oh, you son of a bitch. But to me, I thought the net, you know, there was a net positive out of all of that.
It's kind of a dance, and, though.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, it's a bit of a, there is this sort of dance of holding corporations accountable so that they're doing this kind of thing all year long, and they're benefiting, you know, lots of different groups. I mean, if they're not just benefiting the groups that are commercially sort of successful for them, i.e. meaning white, gay, and lesbian people, that's it. If they're not having trans people front and center modeling their stuff, if they're not putting their money where their mouth is when it comes to Black Lives Matter, like things like that well, if they're like picking and choosing.
Yeah, what? you've said about how yes, these brands might be, you know, shilling corporate pride, but the real question is whether or not they're actually benefiting, like you say, mm-hmm. not just all year, but consistently, you know, reaching out to, you know, being philanthropic toward donations yeah. that actually change policy, mm-hmm. actually influence change. You know, it's the same thing as like anti-racism. It's like, as long as these people or places or businesses are actually pushing to yeah. actually change things, whether it is policy, you know, beyond just attitude, then that means they are actually doing the work. Whereas some mm-hmm. might say, oh, this is just like the Gap, quote unquote, selling out in the way that, not selling out, but it, to me, it reeks of like 90s bands when one band would do a commercial and people would be like, oh my God, they're selling out. And yeah. now everybody sells out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much it even matters anymore, but
well, it's also
selling out when, yeah.
The queer perspective on it, just in terms of the queer benefit, how the queer people benefit from it. And I think Carrie Moyer made a great point in that. I think Carrie Moyer also is of the school of like, there shouldn't be a commercialization of Pride. It needs to be about the founding groups and the people who make up why Pride exists in the first place, meaning queer people. That said, how do queer people hone the commercialization of Pride to not only tell their stories to a larger audience, because the Gap is a big loudspeaker for a lot of people to know about something that they wouldn't normally know about, and to use it so that it gets the word out while at the same time maintains and benefits the people who originally started the group or who are a part of the group.
Mm, yeah. Mm.
It is kind of funny. It's not lost on me, the irony that like our world is becoming commercialized. And I don't mean yeah. that in like a liberal arts Oberlin college. I mean, quite literally, everyone uses an app called Instagram, in which if you have more than 5,000 followers, someone somewhere is paying you to subvertly eat an Auntie Anne's pretzel when yeah. you're yeah. when you're making a story about like whatever dumb shit you're doing that day, and you mm-hmm. get like however much money they make. But like, it's kind of absurd to me, to be totally honest with you, in our society, to kind of pick and choose when it's yeah. okay for companies to commandeer, you know, the space that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And I would also play devil's advocate. I definitely hear both the points you're making, of course, mm-hmm. but I would play devil's advocate. And I should say further the point that you're making, Alan, which is the Gap has the potential to bring awareness to the project, mm-hmm. to the historical ramifications of that group, to more people by far than anything
than them putting out a shirt.
Than them putting out a shirt or anything yeah. else. So
it's like Drag Race in a lot of ways. Go ahead, Elliot.
I was going to say, that all being said, when's the last time you went to the Gap?
Yeah, I know. Every time we pass it in the mall, we're like, when do we go to the Gap? They make great denim jackets.
That's true.
I mostly shop at Old Navy.
Oh,
that's fine. Oh, Alan, your face. I'm surprised.
I'm actually, I'm not even going to make my point about Drag Race. I'm just going to be grossed out by Old Navy.
Oh my God.
I only buy my shirts at Aeropostal.
Arizona Jean Company.
Cotton On, which I'm obsessed with. Gosh. Cotton On.
Yeah, I've walked past that store in the mall and been like, what is this?
I love seeing in the mall that, like, stores that are so archaic and yet somehow still survive. I'm like, I don't understand what Cotton On is. I don't understand how Aeropostale has been in business since 1999. Who starts with one line on them?
They have good little flip-flops.
I'm just baffled into silence.
Not even joking.
We're here with Brooke Van Poplin and Andrea Wallace, co-hosts of the podcast Sidework. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Meow, 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 meow.
You guys are veteran waitresses, and your podcast is all about the service industry.
That's correct. Yeah. So correct. Can I get you?
And I remember, Brooke, you, I think, messaged me to do the podcast. Not trying to brag. I don't think she messaged Elliot or Alan to do the podcast.
I did it. Thank you very much.
Me too.
Thank you.
Well, I'm pretty sure she messaged me first because this was quite a while ago. But I have never been on anything in the service industry.
Never?
Yeah, I remember finding
surprised?
That out. No, I kind of wasn't. I was like,
I'm not fully
surprised.
I'm not. Yeah, now I think of it, I think Brent would probably be a horrible service.
The first person to spit in somebody's food.
Yeah, you probably would get angry real quick.
And that's exactly the problem. I literally, when I watch someone order and if they aren't deferential and respectful, I become enraged.
Yeah.
And like, I can't imagine what it would be like if I was actually their server and they're like, get me some ranch or something. And like, you got to go like fetch ranch in the kitchen. And like, it just seems like a nightmare. But
how did you guys come up with the idea of this podcast? Like, it's such an interesting podcast.
I mean, we just wanted to do, we wanted to do something that like we could relate to. And we had kind of had like a run. We had like a witchy podcast we were doing for a minute. Mm-hmm. Like, what if you drop two Midwest basic bitches in LA and they have to learn how to become witches? Like, that was our idea.
It was so heavy on premise and we have no experience. So it fell apart so fast.
And then we were like, what do we know? Know the world of restaurants. We waited tables together. We've done it forever. Like, we embrace it. Let's talk about what we know. And like, you can, you know, share stories with people. And that's really what it's become. I mean, people send in their stories and tell us the horrible and sometimes amazing things that have happened to them. And like, everybody can relate to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many people have had jobs in the service industry. Myself and Alan, you too, right?
Yeah, I worked at movie theaters. It was a little bit different of a service industry job, but there still was like a food element of serving people and cleaning
Brent,
up after people. And
Brent, you worked at a bank. I mean,
I was a bank teller.
Then you have a button where you can call the police. Counts. If you have a button where you can call the police, it's not service industry. I'm sorry.
Right. I don't know. I think that Brent's really funny. Like, I think his like his desire for political justice to get out there and like share his message with the world is almost like getting the world a side of ranch in a weird fucked up way.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Brooke, wait, what kind of jobs did you guys? You were waitresses, right? Like, did you enjoy being waitresses? Like, what was that? I could not imagine being a waiter or a waitress. Like, that was too much for me.
Like, you know, we've talked about it where I was just like, I don't know if I'm ready to run with the big kids. I think these people smoke and they're kind of fast, you know, running with that fast crowd. And but I quickly realized, I'm not cut out for anything in an office. You cannot make me behave.
Same.
It's just impossible. I was desperate for money. And I forget if it was you, Andrea, or one of our friends was like, oh yeah, here's like a temp agency or whatever. And I was like, okay. And like, everyone was like, what is this street rat doing in our office right now? And like, I didn't own a single piece of clothing that didn't have like a tear or a stain.
Yeah.
All I was doing was waiting tables and or comedy. Like, I am completely feral. And I dropped the F-bomb. I picked up the phone and like the company owner's wife, it was, and I was like, hello. And you're supposed
right.
Like, what do you want? And I got a call back, you know, that they're like, that was the CEO's wife. And I was like, I don't care. And they're like, I was like, okay. It's just, it's more my demeanor. And, you know, and I think to answer that question, it's like, you love it until you don't, but you can rekindle your love for it. But it really comes down to whether or not you had a super toxic work environment.
Right.
And then there are, there are some that are just a dream. So
yeah.
Doesn't it feel like, I mean, I feel like, I mean, I've done a little, you know, waiting tables myself, a little bartending myself.
You did bartending? No, you didn't.
I don't. I had to school you.
Let me rephrase that. Juice bartending.
Oh. Okay.
All right. I mean, that's almost worse.
It is. Yeah.
It is. It is.
But it was. It is such a. It's such a. It. It does feel like a very tribal pursuit, and that it. Yeah. Of course. Of course, side work is a. It, you know, has a loyal, devoted audience, because so many people who have done it even for a little bit, a little period of time, there's just such a, I have to say, like a class divide between the waiters and waitresses and servers and the customers.
Well, yeah.
And
it's so easy. Yeah. Those who serve.
It's so easy to forget.
Yeah. Those who serve and those who get things brought to them.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It's wild. I feel like between you guys, but also other friends who have worked in the service industry as well, you know, there is like, it's like, there's like war stories. You have to, the things that go on are just insane. And they aren't, they feel like maybe they are functional in some capacities, but the stories that I hear feel deeply dysfunctional.
Tell us about like either your personal favorite or like one of the ones you've heard on your podcast, like one of the craziest war stories that you've heard within the service industry.
All right. So we get these ongoing stories from this person who used to manage an Applebee's, basically. And he has this story. I mean, so many. One specifically of there being a bar next door, and they thought there was like there's like this drunk biker asleep in the bushes who he thought was dead. And once he was like, I'm going to call the cops. Are you alive? Got up and like punched the manager square in the face and like ran away.
He bit him too. He bit him and he said, no cops, and ran.
And then he basically like threw his keys at like the closing server and was like, I have to go get a tetanus shot now. You have to close up. The same place, there was a server who
turn off the ice cream machine.
Sure. The same Applebee's, there was a server who was waiting tables, and they both were like having sex with the same dude. And
no, she was waiting. Wow. No. She was waiting on a customer.
Right.
Who the customer was talking about her man, and then the waiter's like, that's my man. How that went down.
Got it.
And so instead of doing what anyone would do, which you'd think like, you know, get into cussing out, she went back to the silverware caddy and got one of the big ass like steak knives and then came over and stabbed the girl's hand to the table.
Yes. And, Holy shit.
And then
I love that girl.
The server was like, I know, I'll be in the office. Like that's what she said. Meanwhile, the paramedics,
the office?
Yeah, like the back manager office where you go.
No, I mean like you mean the jail?
Yes.
Jail.
The safe room.
The office.
He's like, no, there's no you're fired. There's
you're not
no
getting
like,
docked.
Talking
yeah.
to.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Ed, but the girl. The story is, the paramedics come, and to prevent nerve damage, they just had to cut
the table.
A huge chunk of the Applebee's table out and take her to the hospital that way to keep the hand intact. And then she didn't press charges because, to be fair, she tried to shoot that girl earlier.
Yeah,
in the week.
Of course. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, naturally.
Wow.
This was all at Applebee's.
Abnormally trashy. Applebee's, the same person.
I applied to work at an Applebee's in high school. Didn't get hired. Probably for the best now.
I am going to pepper this one in, too, that there was a submitted story we got once about a restaurant where, like, a woman, like, went into the bathroom. When she came out, she had dye in her hair and sat and, like, ate with a dye in her hair and then went to go into the bathroom to rinse it out. And they were like, no, you can't rinse. And they were, and she was like, I'm never coming back here again. How dare you not let me do this? So these are real things that are happening out there.
I feel like the sharing, like sort of what Elliot was talking about before. I remember I smoked for years. One of the things that I loved about smoking is like whenever you're in a situation, you can always figure out who the smokers are and who you're going to go outside with. And it's sort of like this communal like language that you have with smokers and in the smoking section or whatever. Like, I feel like it's the same with servers in that at parties and stuff, you can tell kind of when you connect with another person who has waited before, and then you start telling the stories and you start sharing the craziness and all the things. Like, do you find that, I mean, either you guys or your listeners, like, do you get off on even just sharing these horror stories? Because it's kind of fun.
People have been dying for a platform because other than us, we're one of the handful of audio versions of airing our grievances, but it is so popular on TikTok and Instagram.
Reddit, I'm sure.
Just like a million followers after some of these really great accounts that just talk server language, just shit that only servers get. And then they all like tag each other. And I mean, we're just like, wow, there's, I think we're also just feeling more than ever in the past year, like a total uprising because servers were, you know, it's like, well, which is it? Are they garbage and useless people?
Right. Or essential workers.
Right. Like who should go to college if they didn't want to work a shitty job? Or now they're frontline heroes because you want a hot salad.
Right.
Like, fuck.
Right. But now they're deadbeats again because they don't want to go back to work, you know? So it's
Right.
So,
I remember I did a show in Ann Arbor way back in the day at a bar called the Heidelberg, and I didn't know this before I started doing the show, but the show was Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock at night. So it was actually fairly, and usually it didn't even start until 11. So it was a fairly late show, and the only people who came were servers who were working on Main Street, which is a very busy restaurant area in Ann Arbor, and they would come to the show. And It like, I didn't know until I started doing that show, but there's such a social culture, drinking culture when it comes to being a server. It's almost like there was a guy who was a server. He was like in his 50s. He had been a dentist, like quit and like became a server. And like, he just went out every night of the week with his like 20-year-old friends in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I'm
that sounds like
kind
so
of like,
fun.
That's kind of my dream.
I think it's fair to say, Andrea, too, where we're like, can this podcast sustain itself? And it just doesn't run out of relatable. Yeah. I mean, we go micro. It's like each episode is just one topic that we choose about the restaurant industry. But we've been there, done that with just, you know, the fact that like you sleep with everyone you work with. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
You end up, you know, getting yourself a nice little drinking and drug problem.
Right.
You know, you can't. You can't get out of the routine of, you know, of it's just, it can be a really tough cycle where you're like, well, I get to sleep it off all day and I just have to make it into this shithole by four. And for some people, it can be really, really hard to pump the brakes and make a life and career change. Andrea successfully did it, though.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
Right.
I just kept on with comedy, which is all of those things on top of.
I mean, but, you know, I did go from one service industry into another. You know what I mean? So I'm still like really in the thick of it. But I think that we also really showcase the other end of the spectrum where like this is the job that will like can also help you to get to the places that you really want to go at the same time.
What is I mean, one of the things I think that a lot of people who either haven't done service industry stuff or who just don't understand the economy of service industry jobs, like how much can you make a living, a real living off of like waiting tables and stuff? What that always sort of surprises
career
me.
Career waiters.
It blows me away. What is that like?
So can I just say real quickly that one of our partner podcasts on our network that we created for service industry people, all hosted by service industry people, but Danny and Marlon, they are both career waiters in Hollywood, Florida, and they're both homeowners, business owners. They go to work like 3 days a week. You know,
they go, you broke up. They go to work what?
They work like 3 to 4 days a week. They just are senior and get the best sections and the best nights. And they, you know, have time to pursue other things they love. They're excellent podcasters. But yeah, they're like, you're talking to two homeowners right now. Career, you know, career.
That's amazing. I love, tell us more about the network too, because that's really awesome. That you
We can get there whenever. I was like, I got to sprinkle
it's
the fact
exciting.
That the
Because I also have a pitch. Like I said in the Instagram, I have a pitch for a new podcast. I want to review everything at Disney, the service industry stuff at Disney. I want to talk about all the food. I want to talk about
really
the restaurant
good
stuff.
For it.
I want to
really
do all
idea.
Of it. So that's going to come to you guys once I have time.
We'll produce it.
Wait, so let me also, what were you going to say, Andrew?
Oh, I was just going to say One Star Podcast Network, you know, that's, that is it. You know, Brooke and I think for a long time, kind of like we're banging our heads on the desk and being like, what do we do? How do we like get ourselves out there, you know, and had the Brooke got this amazing connection at a company that you know, we are basically created our own podcast through. And I think we want to represent as much as we can coming from the service industry side, specifically like from the worker side, but we, you know, and get the word out there that like we have stories that are valuable that people should listen to.
And there are so many good podcasts. Our good friend, Brandy's husband, Jason, has a podcast on the network. I mean, there's so many good podcasts on the network. So like, yeah, definitely go check it out.
Jason has a podcast with us?
Yeah, I was like, what are you?
Doesn't he? Oh, doesn't he? I thought he was a guest on one.
Yes.
Oh, he was a guest on Sidework. Yeah. He's amazing.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking then. Yes. Why did I think? He and I talked about doing a food one once, which is why I've maybe
taking yourself with us. And that's odd.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually awesome. That's actually awesome.
I have a story about Jason specifically working in the food industry. Jason was a manager of a bar in like central Hollywood that for years I would periodically just drop by.
Jameson's, sort of, we call it out.
Yes, that's right. Right. I loved it because you could sit at a table and face the sidewalk and see the hundreds of people walking by per minute. He, of course, it wasn't his, you know, favorite job in the world, but he would always talk about like how intense the bar was and how like aggressive the clientele could be. And
he always had to call the police. He was always getting hit and smacked and fights.
I was there. One of the times I was there, we were chatting, and then like 2 minutes later, I look over and someone punched him in the face.
Insane.
And like these bouncers had to like drag the guy away. It wasn't a particularly hard punch for what it's worth. I think Jason.
I loved their nachos.
Were they Irish nachos or just regular nachos?
Mm-hmm. What's Irish nachos?
Well,
I don't know what that
Irish
is.
Irish pubs have things called Irish nachos, which they'll just like throw some corned beef onto, maybe some sauerkraut, or maybe they're waffle fries instead of tortilla chips. I'm just saying. Mm. You could really put a spot.
I wouldn't want any of that. I don't want any of that.
They have their Irish egg rolls. Just work that out.
Pick an international cuisine and make it nachos. You know, that's it.
Yeah. Right. Well, I was also going to ask, like, you guys were talking about how, you know, of course, the dark side of being a waiter, which is just shitty people, but are there like stories that stick out in your head that were really like uplifting? Upworthy.com, dare I say?
Upworthy. I mean, we could submit some of this shit to Upworthy, I swear. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, because you know how you might be like fiercely protective of and supportive of a bar, a restaurant, or a coffee shop that you're like, this is my place. Yeah. I love them. I cannot see them fail. I feel like we saw fantastic stories once again of, you know, like how like when anyone gets sick because we have a fucking flawed infrastructure for health insurance, that the community comes together and like pays for your open heart surgery. So it's the community has really come together when the government failed miserably and really helped some restaurants stay afloat or they pay kindness. We were just talking about this earlier. There's like a 75-year-old Wendy's drive-thru worker. His name's like Joe, and he'd worked there for 15 years, like 4 days a week, and the town just like loved him so much, heard that he was going through some sort of rough financial time, and they like all banded together and raised $10,000 for him.
Oh, wow. Sweet. I love Wendy.
And he like blew it all on Coke or whatever?
Yeah, totally.
Rent! He probably went and paid rent.
Oh! How dare you assume?
Yeah, it's just, of course. And I think that's what's really fun is people know that we aren't here. It's just, it's not a nonstop shitting on customers fest. At first, you know, it was so fun to get it all off of our chests. But the truth is there's so much just structural problems.
Yeah.
Most restaurants, the conception of them, they were run by, you know, criminals. Most still are.
Right.
It's just clueless. Right. Terrible, abusive people. And so to see a reckoning sort of starting to come over the industry, Andrea, it's like we thought when the pandemic hit that we were fucked and that our podcast was over.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And it actually got more
relevant than
more
ever.
Interesting and more relative. So.
And just hearing people's stories like going through COVID too. But like, you know, going back to what Brooke was saying, like everybody agrees like that to just, I guess, adhere by the rules of the fucked up restaurant system and what it is in general. Like we all go, we all like our server. We don't like our server. You know, we do a lot of origin stories. And like the fact is that the tipping system in this country is built on formerly enslaved humans, you know.
Yeah.
where like when emancipation happened and like people could go get jobs, all they could get were jobs that would tip and they didn't get any hourly. So it was just like another form of oppression, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is the system that we still use to this day.
And we don't question it. It's so fucked up, but we are now.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is really great. I mean, speaking of that, one of the things I think that is so recognizable against for most people is those Instagram or Twitter posts where someone, a server, will post a picture of a receipt where they don't leave a tip.
My favorite.
They'll say, I'm broke. Or what was you gonna say, Elliot?
I was gonna say my favorite is when somebody leaves them like $1,000 tip.
Well,
it's like,
well, that's amazing. On the flip side, there's like two sides to it that go viral. There's one where it's like, here's $1,000. There's another one where it's like, sorry, I'm broke, or better service or something. Nothing infuriates me more when someone, I mean, and I think I talked about this on your podcast when I was on it, that like one of the first things that I recognized about my boyfriend, Michael, and what I recognize in people in general is how they treat sort of people in service industry and how they tip and how they interact with them. And if they look them in the eye when they give a drink and say, thank you. And like those kind of things are important as a human.
Absolutely.
And it's like, how on the podcast do you guys react to like those crazy posts of people just not tipping? Like who are these assholes?
Well, it's, first of all, it's fun because you post it and it just, it's like throwing a rock at a beehive. Like it gets everybody in the comment section just like, you know, just all freaking out. And then you get of course, the, oh shit, what's the term for just being contrary just because you can't, sorry.
Curmudgeon?
Contrarian?
Yeah,
contrarian?
I could just being a contrarian or whatever, where then it's usually like a 20-year-old boy who's like, it's not my fault that you don't have a good enough job. I don't see why I have to pay. You, and they all say that and you're like, see, but this is what the system wants. They want you to understand that we like these jobs, that these jobs are amazing in the sense that like you can build your schedule however you want. Yeah, I have been able to live in every city I've ever dreamed of because I could work in a restaurant somewhere and start a life for myself. And, you know, just this whole looking down upon it thing. But yeah, it's like when you see that someone doesn't tip, it really does spur this, the comments that are like, well, that's because you're incapable of having a nice job, so this is what you deserve, then with a bunch of angry shit upon people like clapping back and be like, no, you're absolutely wrong. And you know, because we have situations where people are like, my owner of the restaurant has never once given any one of us a paycheck, I've never filed taxes, I don't know what the fuck is going on. It like completely disempowers folks in a lot of ways too, and you're taken advantage of, and so it's a mess. I mean, and I know, Andrea, I'm like all geared up, but trying to start the conversation about moving away from a tipped economy.
It's important. Yeah. We should get rid of that.
It's important, but you have to understand that that is one of the most frightening things you can tell someone who's lived this way their whole life. And they're all like, oh, fuck you. Hell no. Like, but it's a
And you're putting your trust in a company, too, that's going to pay you and give you wages and give you health insurance and all of these things because, that you may not trust.
Yeah. Again, the managers and owners are crooks. And so you're like, of course they're not going to crunch numbers for me. So it's not going to be easy because it's a very weaselly, deeply problematic industry.
Well, I guess.
But it's
in
other countries.
But I guess my problem, like, I guess my question is like, my understanding of the people who wait is that they bring home a lot of tips in cash. Obviously, when it comes time to do your taxes, everyone's a little bit creative. It's not easy to track. I mean, and also you're working 4-6 hour shifts. I mean, if you were making, look, let's be honest, waiters aren't going to make $40 an hour. If you were making $15-$20 an hour as a waiter, I don't think there's any way you would make more if you were getting an hourly wage than, you know, someone would on a busy night at Outback Steakhouse, dare I say. I mean, am I right or do you disagree?
I don't know. Everybody has their own system. And some, even though there is going to be like here in California, there's a minimum wage for servers and people tip on top of it. So you're getting more because of it. And I think that's... Yeah.
You are getting $20, $25 an hour sometimes in some places. Yeah.
I mean, we've all fucking been out to eat in this town. Servers are making great money here, you know, for the most part, if some of the places that we're going to. But this goes across the board where we're not just talking about like these high end places where we'll fucking be like, sure, I'll pay $17 for a cocktail. What, you know, but we're talking about like smaller towns where like there's TGIF, a small diner like, where people don't pay. And you have a lot of like women specifically like under the poverty line with symptoms and stripes, you know, and that's the true change that needs to happen. Now, I in my service industry, now that I work in the spa industry as an esthetician in California, when basically all the independent contractors a couple years ago across the board were dissolved, right? That's a no-no in this state anymore. That also included me as someone who was an independent contractor, paid my own taxes, had everything set up. All of a sudden, I'm an employee and everything has to change. And what it came down to, as much as it pained me and I was like, I'm gonna lose fucking money, like this is crazy, you know, and I did in ways, but eventually I made it back and it's fine and I'm fine with the system now and do great. But you have to think about other people in your industry who are not getting a fair shake, who were legally getting fucked, you know.
Yeah,
and it's the same thing with so many other things in our country. Like, you know, when you're voting, you should think about who you're voting for. You're not just voting for yourself, you're voting for the people in your community.
Absolutely. So if we can if we can even the playing field for some folks, like I think it's okay. Just and then everything will kind of rebuild from there and recalibrate. But it's not a terrible thing.
It's not a terrible thing. And like as a server, we all do stupid server math where it's like, yeah, but like my Saturdays are my $300 night. And you're like, yeah, but your Monday lunch shift is $20.
Right.
And you always have the shits on that shift. Let's face it. You're hungover. You have the shits.
And so it's just like, do we dare to have the concept of a budget and a yearly salary? It's so lost on servers. But it could actually provide stability that has been
a sustainable, livable wage. That's what we all
and
have
we
a right to.
We advocate for back of house. They have it so much fucking worse than servers in a lot of ways too, where they're there twice. They'll be on a shift for twice the amount of time we are. And there's, and it, so it causes work, like work rifts between the back of house and front of house where they fucking despise us because they're like, look at them waltzing in at 4 p.m. and they're out of here at 10.
Yes.
I'm pulling a 12-hour shift and I make $7 an hour. And so again, instead of us all banding together and saying, hey, we demand this whole system be, you know, fucking gets a redo. It's, you know, like I said, it's easier, like the government and the powers that be like it when we fight each other and forget about them.
Absolutely.
That they're the problem.
And just for like a cherry on top of all of this, the base wage for a server hasn't changed since 1991 in the majority of the states in this country.
Designing Women was on TV then.
$2.13 an hour since 1991, and it hasn't changed in the majority of the states in this nation.
That is ridiculous. 1991. I mean, Brent was 48 in 1991.
Give me more. I know. Tell me what else was happening in 1991. I want to know more facts.
Oh, you want to know more? I got it all. You got the
Clarence Thomas moment. You got so much. Thelma and Louise came out. Silence of the Lambs. Jodie Foster won her second Oscar.
Oh, my God. That actually was a little surreal. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find your podcast and where can they find you on the internet?
Oh, let's see. Well, you guys were Instagram is preferred. That's where we are present. We've completely forgot we have a Twitter. So at Sidework Podcast is Instagram. And you can find information about all our other podcasts and our network on our social media.
That's great.
Yeah.
And our person. Perfect.
Well, thank you guys.
This is great.
Wait, who are you? Can people follow you guys too? Because you're people who
you
have things
can
in
follow
the world.
Me.
No interest.
I mean,
no, it's a I'm on Instagram at Brooke VP, like I'm the vice president, but it's just because my last name's Van Poppelin.
Well, what about you, Andrea?
Oh, I'm what am I always? There's an underscore.
What are you?
At underscore Andrea_Wallace_. There's a lot of that happening. Sorry, everybody.
We'll tag you.
Or find me and then look up Andrea in my friends.
I'm just saying, yeah. if we're going to do a show all about Disney and Disney food, like we all have to go together and like do taste tests and like.
Girl, I am going. I'm going this Sunday to Disney. So like, I am ready.
Go check out the new food at the new Marvel campus. Is that what's?
I have a whole plan, and in fact, I worked it into my Weight Watchers plan. So girl. Thank you.
Well,
thank you guys.
And another thing.
So this is a little bit of old news, but I still think it's very funny. Kid Rock.
Oh God.
Right.
Kid Rock, the 90s like rock rapper, I guess. He was sort of like
former boyfriend metal. Of Sheryl Crow.
I don't know if they actually dated. I don't think they actually dated. I think they duetted did. And they did a duet that was fine, but I think they used that to then, they used the PR of them potentially dating to fuel listens to the song. But I actually don't think, I mean, I know she goes for like Lance Armstrong, who's kind of trashy, but
she goes for the Republican felons.
Oof. I don't know. I hope she wouldn't go for Kid Rock because I respect her more than that. But
he probably has a big dick, I bet.
He does. I think I knew he does. But either way, he is, you know,
I'm
sort
looking
of
up his naked nudes now.
He's perennially disgusting. Always was, always will be. Love Trump. He also teased running for mayor of or governor of Michigan. As
Senate, I think. I think he's teased running for Senate.
Horrifying. Never changes hair. But anyway, he's this, he's, you know, now and forever, just like the king of white trash. And he recently has refused to apologize for using homophobic slurs at a concert in Tennessee, where he said, "Fuck your iPhone. Yeah, you fucking faggots with your iPhones out." I'm screaming at the audience. And so, of course, this, you know, drew up some controversy. I mean, not much, but enough that I think it fuels an interesting conversation where he says that he can't be considered homophobic because he has gay friends. And this also isn't the first time this happened to him. In 2017, at a concert in Detroit, he actually launched into a rant over LGBTQ rights and said, why these days is everything so gay? And he actually tweeted recently after this whole thing happened. If this is him writing in third person, if Kid Rock using the word faggot offends you, good chance you are one. Either way, I know he has a lot of love for his gay friends, and I will have a talk with him. Have a nice day. And he tweeted this, but it was a quote by Bob Ritchie, and I don't know who that is.
I think that's like his alter ego or something, right?
Oh, gross.
Don't know enough about Kid Rock.
I don't know. I honestly know. I'm from Michigan, nothing about Kid Rock.
Well, I guess the big question is, can you, like Kid Rock, not be a homophobe while still using gay slurs and not being gay?
Well, one thing I can tell you is you cannot look up Kid Rock naked because a warning comes up on Google that says child sexual abuse imagery is illegal. So, So don't do that.
Right. That's a very good one. Alan is now on a list somewhere.
Apparently, because I'm looking for Republican dick.
Yeah. That's actually really funny. You know, you guys have heard me use the F word on our podcast before, and I personally enjoy using it in a reclamation kind of way, but I also am like appalled when I hear someone who genuinely like uses it.
Yeah.
But that's also so exceedingly rare at this point that I actually have to like take a moment to take stock into what would quantify, like let's suppose, I mean, I don't believe him that he has gay friends. But let's suppose like he does, like,
Uncle Cracker's infamously gay. I'm just kidding.
Like, does that change the calculus? If like, let's say he did have large group of gay friends.
No, straight people should not be calling people. I mean, it depends on the context, you know, I think the difference between the word faggot and the N word specifically is that there isn't a long history of oppression based on the word faggot. You know what I mean? Like there isn't, I mean, there is, but like not to the same depth and historical relevance that the N-word has. And so part of me is like, okay, everyone, chill out. Like, this, it is about the context. And Kid Rock saying it is very homophobic. And if a straight person says it in a derogatory way, it is very homophobic. And I would venture to say most straight people should not be using the word faggot. That said, I use it often in my act. I use it often in drag. I use it amongst my friends. I call you guys faggot. I mean, I am very casual with the word, mainly because I find sort of queer power in saying it, because I am very much just being queer in public, in my act, in who I am, in my drag and everything. And and I find it to be almost like freeing in a way that I can do it and that straight people can't, and that I'm never using it in a necessarily a derogatory way. I'm always using it in sort of a I don't know. And just
you're using it with a PH, so it's different.
Yeah. PHH. Yes. Yeah. But I also understand why some people, especially queer people, might be upset by it and by the use of it still. I get it. I mean, it's a controversial topic.
And in context, you know, it obviously makes you think about like the N word. And Kid Rock has actually said, he said on Stern, I think years ago, that he always used the N word and there's nothing wrong with it. And he said it's because the black people in his band said it was okay. But I remember Howard then pointed out that he pays those people, which, by the way, I don't even know if either things are true, but he says he pays those people. So you know, of course, they're not going to object, I guess. But I also don't believe Kid Rock in the first place. I mean, I just agree. I think it's trash. It's gross. Like, no, that's not your word to use, dude. You're he's just,
I mean, I can't even see a situation where straight people would use the word in a think of a situation where
it's hard to imagine. Michigan, it's you know, it's, I take pride in Michigan being like a generally moderate, reasonable Midwest state. You know, it's not Massachusetts, it's not California, but it's, you know, we've never had the death penalty. We never had the death penalty.
We had
Dr. Kevorkian. We have obviously Harvard of the Midwest, University of Michigan. So there's a lot of pride you can take from Michigan, but Ted Nugent and Kid Rock,
we have
two like degenerate white trash musicians, rocker. I mean, I still don't understand how Kid Rock is still like a household name when
I've never heard
one of his songs.
Oh, well, you have in Bawa the Taba. 90s.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, you did when you were a kid. You heard Bawa Taba.
But not anything recent.
No, not anything recent. Oh. I think he just, my guess is that he just, you know, does like trashy festivals and, you know, low rent shows. But I can't imagine there's an audience for his music. I mean, the last time he charted, I would imagine it was when he sang that song with Sheryl Crow.
Thanks, Sheryl. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, thank you, Sheryl.
All I want to do is not have fun with that.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
Even I've heard Bawa Tadaba.
I had to Google the name of his big rock's big song. Bawa Taba. And it is the fucking dumbest sounding song I've ever heard in my life.
It is.
I just cannot believe he's famous.
How does it go? Ahead, Elliot.
It goes Bawa Taba da dang da dang diggy diggy up jumps the boogie.
Yeah, okay, that's the part I know. Yeah,
I do. We do it at haunting renditions.
Yes, that's the only place I know it from. Yeah.
My aunt Joanne would say, "Until they work at Ben's Deli, I'll tell Brooke and Andrea they have nothing to complain about." How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would say, "I always leave a big tip. And if I'm feeling saucy, I might even suggest a nail polish color."
I love Aunt Anne. And I love Aunt Joanne as well.
Yeah,
as a friend.
She broke her knee recently.
Oh, no.
But she's undergoing surgery and should be okay.
My Aunt Anne just posted a Trump coming back to save the United States meme.
Okay, good.
So, you know, we're all on our journeys.
Brother. All right, well, thanks for listening. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I am Brent Sullivan.
And I am Brent Sullivan.
Oh, you jerk. I can't say any bad words. Elliot will get mad. I see my backhand me.
Thank you.